Welcome to this KUNM special about a series of three exhibitions celebrating 300 years of Spanish art and time to coincide with Albuquerque's tricentennial. My name is Stephen Spitz. Today's program focuses upon the second of these exhibitions and was recorded in October 2005. The third exhibition closes on April 23rd, 2006. Today we talk about a series of three exhibitions at the Albuquerque Art Museum, timed to correspond with the celebration of Albuquerque's tricentennial. Joining me to discuss these exhibitions is their curator, Ellen Landis. Ellen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And also joining me today, I'm very pleased to have my friend and art historian, David Craven. David's an art historian at UNM. David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Steve.
What I'd like to do on the program today is talk a little bit about the nature of the exhibitions, what they say about our culture, and then discuss some specific artists, their works, and try to assess the significance of those artists. So, Ellen, to start with, could you just generally, for people who aren't familiar with the series of exhibitions that's occurring, could you tell us a little bit about that series of exhibitions?
Sure. The museum is putting on a series of three exhibitions, all of which celebrate Albuquerque's tricentennial of the founding of the city by the Spanish in 1706. The first of the exhibitions was the Golden Age of Spain, and it basically had paintings and sculpture of artists from El Greco de Goya. The second exhibition, Prelude to Spanish Modernism, deals with the 19th century and early 20th century, Mariano Fortuny to Pablo Picasso. And the third exhibition, which opens in December, is a show of 20th and 21st century art from Spain, which is Picasso to Plenza, a century of art from Spain.
And what's the rationale sort of behind putting on these exhibitions during the tricentennial?
To bring to New Mexico, and especially to Albuquerque, works of art that are by a culture and an ethnicity that is prevalent in New Mexico as well as in Mexico, and that came from Spain, and that many, in fact, most people here in New Mexico would never be able to see.
They wouldn't be able to see it because it would never come to the United States and be put together in this fashion?
They wouldn't see it because, first of all, they would need to travel all over the world to see the pieces that are in the exhibition, and they would never see them grouped as they are here. These paintings and sculptures have been put together in some way so that they have an affinity to New Mexico.
All right. Now, if people come to the current exhibition, the one that's presently on in November and December, when does the second exhibition conclude?
November 28th.
November 28th. If they come to that exhibition, what's the kind of stuff they're going to see when they look at the painting? It's all paintings, right?
Yes, this exhibition is all paintings.
Right.
And it deals with Spanish painting, as I say, from Fortuny to Picasso. They really cover the gamut from small paintings of representational work. Fortuny was a very fine technician. The satin, the lace are all beautifully rendered. Picasso, as we know, this precedes his Cubist period, but certainly there are signs of where he will be going in the future. And everything in between.
Now, the exhibition's called, David Craven, A Prelude to Modernism. Do you accept that terminology? And if so, what does it mean?
Prelude to Modernism. Well, because the exhibition begins in the early 19th century with Fortuny, who was born in 1838, certainly prelude would seem to be a justified term. Normally, when we deal with the advent of early modernist painting, taking particularly Francophile viewpoint, most modernist historians do, we date the earliest modernist paintings by Monet to around Edouard Monet from around 1860. And, of course, it took several decades to consolidate not only what he accomplished as well as shifts that were inaugurated by other figures, but to then create this delta-like expanse that modernism ultimately became. So prelude seems to be, a highly justified term. You won't get any polemic out of me on that.
Well, I'm disappointed, I must say. Let me try again. your area of specialty, I think, is Latin America and Mexico. Is that right?
That's one of my areas of concentration. Yes.
Okay. So how do you? What's the relationship that you see in, say, the current exhibition to Latin America and Mexico? How would you say these paintings relate to Latin America and Mexico, or what do they tell us about Latin America and Mexico during this same time period?
They actually relate in some surprising ways. One is just by means of the term. The term modernismo, modernism, and it was in fact invented in the Spanish-speaking world, not in the French-speaking or the English-speaking world, dates from the 1880s. The term was coined, as far as we know, by a great Nicaraguan poet, very celebrated in Latin America today, named Rubén Darío. And he first used the term modernismo in the 1880s. He took the term with him when he went to Spain, specifically Catalonia, in the 1890s, and instantly did hang out, knew Picasso evidently, certainly met Rivera, Diego Rivera, when he came over later, in 1906 or 7, from Mexico, and of course Gaudí, in the cafe that's reconstructed there, the cafe of the Cuatro Gats.
Yeah, when you say it's reconstructed there, we should point out that the museum has constructed a replica of the Cafe of the Four Cats. I won't try to say it in Catalan. and that's the place that you're talking about. That cafe was in Barcelona, and that's where these people, these artists, hung out, talked about what art, politics,
that cafe
culture.
Was one of the crucibles for basically forging the terms for this new word, modernism. Picasso actually designed the menu for it. That's since been reissued. I've actually been to that cafe over the last few years. When I was living in Spain, 1845, I went and had drinks there, and it's a really striking place. Rubén Darío actually gave lengthy descriptions of it. It was also a really important place for anarchist thought. Barcelona was one of the key centers for anarchist movements during this period. Picasso, of course, was an anarchist. Diego Rivera in this period was as well. Rubén Darío was sympathetic. So it was both about
art and
politics.
I've always heard they were communists as well as anarchists.
Communism was something that basically emerged out of it. But one of the adages I always find quite enlightening
Marxist,
about—
Marxist, I should say, rather than communist.
Quite enlightening about that. Well, Marxism wasn't something that had a big impact in Spain until a few decades later. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I always keep in mind is a statement by one of the anarchists who was actually involved in the Haymarket incident in Chicago. He said, every socialist is an anarchist, but every anarchist is a socialist, but not every socialist is an anarchist. So that's one way of thinking about it. And anyway, Picasso's Barcelona period was one interwoven with anarchist politics. There's no doubt about that. So the Café of the Cuatro Gats was a place where bombs were probably created at one point to deal with Castilian authority, which was seen as basically an imperial force in Spain then and sometimes now.
But to bring my question back to the exhibition itself, I mean, if you just take, for example, Fortuny, Sorolla, and Picasso, all of them are essentially Spanish expats. They leave Spain, they move to Paris, which is the cultural capital of the world, if you will, in the 1850s, at least you can disagree with this if you want, and they create works that are collected by non-Spaniards. You know, what makes them, quote, Spanish artists, and what makes their work something that's particularly relevant to people of, say, Mexico or New Mexico, in your view?
Well, that's a really important question, because modernism is first and foremost an international movement.
All right.
And however much one can talk about sites where it emerged, one of the key things about it, and it's a very healthy trend, I think, is the internationalism of it. Ultimately, one could say that modernism in most forms was anti-nationalistic. So it entailed basically drawing on tendencies from various cultures, particularly, say, Spanish culture, but not in a way that was about refusing a dialogue with other cultures. Why did modernism take root earliest in Spain, probably in Barcelona, because that was an international place at the crossroads of France and Spain. So Picasso and people linked up with Catalan culture were already thinking about multiple models for what they were doing. And modernism, as, of course, the movement that gave us the collage, and Gaudí's Parque Güell is a magnificent example of an architectural collage. If you've ever sat on those benches composed of shards of pottery and glass and components of the past, was very much about using things from disparate places, not just from a locale. So it was the antipode of provincialism in that way.
Now, if you really wanted to try to understand the impact of Spanish culture on Mexican and, I guess, New Mexican mm-hmm. culture, New Mexico was part of Spain up until, well, certainly during this time period. I mean, there's plenty of places in New Mexico to investigate that right now, right in Santa Fe, correct?
There are, both in Mexico and in New Mexico. You have any number of points of intersection with Spanish culture of the 19th century and the 18th century. There are some key altarpieces, for example, in Santa Fe, one at the Iglesia de los Reyes at the end of Canyon Road. And that's a really commanding work that evidently was made in Mexico at a time when, of course, it was still part of Spain in the late 18th century and brought up on the Camino Real. The University of New Mexico has actually a small but I think substantial collection of art from the colonial period, including a work by Juan Correa, who was seen as one of the key figures working in Mexico City in the 18th century, again, at a time when it was still part of Spain, and that work was brought up here as well. Similarly, the Santos paintings and a lot of what we consider to be indigenous popular culture in New Mexico are unthinkable without the link to Spain. On the other hand, to back up just a minute, I think we have to talk about the fact that Spanish culture wouldn't have developed as it developed had it not, in a number of cases, taken quite a bit from the New World, from Mexican culture, including New Mexico. So there was a transatlantic dialogue going on that's extremely important to point out. When Francisco Zurbarán, one of the great figures of the early Baroque period, first half 17th century, produced paintings for
Mexico. And his
Mexico.
Work was in the first exhibition,
yes,
right?
Yeah. When he produced paintings for Mexico, he was thinking about very specific demands being made by patrons there. And in fact, something like half of his works were done for the New World. So he did those works with cultural differences in mind, cultural differences in turn that influenced actually the way in which he painted. So there was a back and forth dialogue. I don't want to argue that it's simply a matter of Europe, Spain, France, England, wherever, Germany, simply giving culture to people who respond in a somewhat passive way. The impact of the Americas was notable in all sorts of subtle ways.
And do you want to throw in your two cents on this, Alan?
Well, from the beginning, in the first exhibition, of course, there were Santos and Bultos included in the exhibition for this very reason. If you go to Santa Fe in July, you know, there is Spanish Market here. And the contemporary artists do these Santos and Bultos. And many have...
In other words, the tradition continues.
Continues today. And many don't realize that tradition actually came from Spain many centuries ago.
Yeah.
And it did not, as many people think, just come from Mexico because there was the interchange with Spain. So that these three areas have always had some kind of contact since the New World was found.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I would just mention to listeners, I think the Spanish Colonial Museum, Art Museum, which is on Museum Hill in Santa Fe, is a wonderful museum that shows this, shows the interreaction between Spain, the New World, and actually a lot of the rest of the world, too.
And New Mexico.
And New Mexico, exactly. And if you've just tuned in, this is a KUNM special. We're talking about a series of three art exhibitions, 300 Years of Spanish Art. The second exhibition is currently at the Albuquerque Art Museum. And my guests today are Ellen Landis. She is the curator of the exhibitions. And I'm also very pleased to have David Craven, who's a UNM art historian. And my name is Stephen Spitz. And let's try to be a little more specific, talk about some specific artists and specific works, Ellen. So The exhibition starts, this one starts with Fortuny.
Right.
And I wonder if you could talk about any one of his works and describe it as best you can on the radio so people get a sense of the kind of stuff they would see when they look at Fortuny.
Well, when you look at Fortuny, you have to realize that after Goya in Spain, there really wasn't any well-known artist until Fortuny.
Goya dies about 1830, is that right?
Somewhere in that area.
Okay.
And Fortuny developed an entirely different style. He was, as we mentioned, one of those artists who has traveled. And because of that, he was very familiar with Orientalism. He was very familiar with what was going on in the Arab world. He went to Morocco for a great period of time. So his works were totally different from anything anybody had seen before. And when he did go to France, he met an art dealer who fell in love with his work and sold so many. I mean, many people think of Monet and, well, especially Van Gogh, as these poor artists who never sold a painting. And indeed, in many cases, that is true. The Spanish have a totally different situation. They were extraordinarily wealthy. They were extraordinarily popular. Their paintings were purchased by Americans, by French, by the Germans, by the English. Their paintings are everywhere. And Fortuny, although he only lived until the age of 36, was the beginning of this trend of very popular painters from Spain. The painting that I, of course, am enchanted by is the Beach at Portici, which is a landscape study. Actually, it's a seascape study. And the reason I'm so entranced by it is because, to me, it is a prelude to modernism. I think it just coins everything that David has just said. It is a study, but it is finished. It was done in the last year of Fortuny's life. And it is a band of horizontal colors. It could be, if you didn't know it was a seascape and done, you know, in the 19th century, it could be in some ways considered a 20th or 21st century painting. It just has that simplicity, although it does have much more painterly technique than most of the artists who would be doing bands of colors today. It's just an amazing painting, and it's a vertical. Seascapes are never vertical. They're always trying.
Meaning it's more vertical than it is. It's longer, longer vertically.
It's much
than
taller
it is.
Than it is wide.
Exactly.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes. And most seascapes, of course, because you're trying to get the horizon line, are horizontal. And so this painting has just an inordinate amount of things in it to consider. And it's such a simple work and so powerful. I should say, however, that we are talking about Mariano Fortuny. His son was the one that everybody thinks of when they think of Fortuny because he designed fabric and clothing. And many people are familiar with Fortuny dresses.
Right.
Mariano is not the designer of Fortuny dresses.
So when you talk about Fortuny, David, Portici is in Italy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a Spanish artist who's basically in Paris and he's painting a beach in Italy.
He was in Italy at the time he painted this.
No, I understand. Yeah. He has a place. His studio is primarily in Paris. He's in Italy.
Yes.
Painting.
Uh-huh.
So what does that tell us about Spanish culture as it relates to people in New Mexico, do you think, if anything?
Well, it tells us a number of things both about Europe and about here. One is that modernism happens between cultures as much as within them. Mm-hmm. And this is a great case in point. Another is that it was an international language, however much it might have had an inflection of distinctively Spanish character within Fortuny's case. It's a type of work, too, that would have resonated in Mexico with the teachers of Diego Rivera, such as Belasco, very great landscape painter. In fact, he's one of the people who would come to mind as an individual producing analogous works a little later. Although, again, Belasco's work tends to be a little more linear in character, a little more sort of meticulous in detail in a way that would go against some of the modernist dimensions that we talked about before that Ellen mentioned, this type of sophisticated simplicity, where you evoke as much as delineate things. But it's work that certainly would have had a connection and an impact on Diego Rivera. And I should say, it's interesting to note that when he was studying in Spain, he went there in 1907, studied with an artist not in the show, less significant than the ones in the show, a guy named Eduardo Chicharro Aguera, that in 1908, 1909, that Sorolla actually came to the studio in which Diego Rivera was working and gave a very positive critique of one of his paintings called La Fraga, basically the sort of blacksmith shop, and said that he was seen to be the star student of this artist. So Sorolla met Diego Rivera at a formative moment in his career. So there are a lot of points of intersection there that I think are quite interesting as well.
Yeah, that's an amazing story.
That brings back, you know, the connection to Mexico and also New Mexico, culturally speaking, since we're really linked to Mexico so deeply.
Now, Sorolla, who David just mentioned, is another artist in the exhibition. He's actually one of the better-known artists in the exhibition.
Yes, he is at this point in time. There have been a few retrospectives of his work, and so people are more familiar with him than with anyone else in the show, probably except for Picasso.
So tell us a little about Sorolla then, Ellen.
Well, Sorolla was another of the Spanish painters who, interestingly, traveled to America several times. He was extraordinarily prolific. The couple of shows that he had, when he did one at the Hispanic Society in New York and one at the Art Institute in Chicago, he brought over approximately 350 paintings each time, as well as other exhibitions in which he painted and exhibited over 300 paintings. So the man painted quite rapidly, he had a facility with the brush. It was just amazing. Most people think of him as the Spanish impressionist, and I guess he is as close to that as anyone could be. He was an interesting man. He loved his family, and so many of the paintings in the exhibition are beach scenes of his children. But the painting I found fascinating was this one of Thomas Fortune Ryan. It is a man that most people don't even know of today. But at the time, Ryan was the 10th richest man in America and an avid art collector. His collection of Rodins was the core of the Brooklyn Museum's collection of Rodin sculptures. And he gave his paintings to museums everywhere. He was from Virginia. He gave his paintings to the Richmond Museum. Strangely enough, when he died, everything went up for auction because he said he had given away enough in his lifetime that he was not going to give away anything when he died. He was not a nice person. He was in the railroad business and in the diamonds, and he owned Equitable Insurance, actually.
American Tobacco, too.
Yes, that too. He was actually, I think what one could say, the first person who developed a holding company, although it wasn't called that in his day. But in this painting by Sorolla, you see a rather stern man, but a nice man, because he was a friend of Sorolla's and because he had bought so many.
He's a big patron.
And yes, commissioned so many paintings of Sorolla. But you also see a little sculpture in there by Rodin, the sculpture called Brother and Sister. Which is a tribute, I think, from Sorolla to Rodin, because he did not have to include that on the desk. But interestingly, Rodin did a portrait of Thomas Fortune Ryan, and Rodin hated every moment of it. In fact, he said that if he weren't paid so well, he would never have done it. So it's an interesting juxtaposition, because Sorolla enjoyed doing it. He was a friend of Ryan's, and Rodin couldn't stand the man.
So you now, instead of having court painters, David, now you have painters that are hired by wealthy capitalists to do their work.
True. I mean, of course, now you have photographers who handle that particular role, the Richard Avedons of the world. But to go back to what Ellen was saying and to recall a point you made earlier, one of the things to keep underscoring about modernism is its international scope. Raymond Williams, great British literary theorist, said that if you really think about it, in Europe, modernism was a creation of émigrés and refugees. And that's a fascinating way to think about it. Certainly it's characteristic of Picasso. First, he left intentionally. There was a point after the emergence of fascism in Spain when he couldn't go back. So same thing with Miró and any number of other figures. So modernism certainly is not only about the whole issue of modernity and the dislocation of culture and populations that modernization brought with it. Modernism is a response to it in terms of the literal dislocation of the artist producing it in many ways.
Let's talk about Picasso, because you're fortunate enough in the exhibition, Ellen, to have three Picassos.
That's wonderful.
And, you know, probably all our listeners have heard of Picasso, but maybe you want to give a little summary of what he his impact in the art world.
Well, of course, everybody, I'm sure, is aware of Picasso's impact on the art world from 1907 forward, because that was the date of Demoiselles d'Avignon and the beginning of Cubism and on and on and on. And, you know, from then on, he was considered probably a genius and one of the greatest painters of all time, one of the greatest artists of all times, because he used all kinds of media. But the paintings in this exhibition are early, and we tried to show different styles that Picasso exhibited in his paintings. There are three paintings. Each one is different. The one that I find so interesting is a little painting called Street Scene, in which there are the backs of people, because these people are walking away from you. And it, to me, brings back so many things of artists that have nothing to do with Picasso. It brings back the feel almost of Degas' Absinthe Drinkers, the sad, sad people who are almost anonymous. The gentleman in the Picasso painting does have a face, but the woman and the child are walking away and you can't see them at all.
We only have about a minute left, so maybe you can trace, maybe just explain how the third exhibition is going to pick up from the point you're just at right now and what it's going to have in it.
The third exhibition, Picasso de Plenza, A Century of Art from Spain, actually does exactly that. It shows a century of art by Spanish artists. It starts with Picasso. It includes Miró. It includes Dalí. It includes Juan Gris. It includes a tremendous variety of artists. It ends with Plenza. Those people who are familiar at all with Plenza's work are familiar with the piece in the Chicago Sculpture Park, which is this enormous fountain. But we have two sculptures by him in the exhibition.
We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you so much, my two guests, Ellen Lannis, curator of the Albuquerque Art Museum, and David Craven, UNM art historian. My name's Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to this KUNM special on 89.9 Albuquerque, Santa Fe. You have been listening to a KUNM special about a series of three exhibitions at the Albuquerque Museum, celebrating 300 years of Spanish art. Today's program focused upon the second of those exhibitions and was recorded in October 2005. The third exhibition runs through April 23, 2006. I would like to give special thanks to my two engineers, Steve Madrid and Roman Garcia. My name is Stephen Spitz.